Good morning, everyone. Good morning. It's Wednesday, November 16th, 2016. This is the Board of Directors' regular meeting of the Bay Area Air Quality Management District. My name is Eric Maher, the chair. Let me ask if Ms. Marcy Hiratska, our clerk, could call the roll.
On the roll for the Board of Directors meeting of November 16th, 2016, Director Avalos, here. Director Barrett, Director Bates, here. Director Canepa, Director Chavez, here. Director Davis, here. Director Joya,
here.
Director Groom,
present.
Director Haggerty, here. Director Kaplan, here. Director Miley, here. Director Mitchoff,
here.
Director Pepper, Director Ju, here. Director Rice, here. Director Ross, Director Sinks, here. Director Slocum, so Director Sparing, Director Wagon Connect, here. Director Zane,
Aki,
Secretary Hudson,
here.
Vice Chair Nis,
here.
Chair Maher,
here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. Everyone, please join us for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Someday. Thank you. Colleagues, we have an agenda that's going to be changed. I'm going to recommend that we make some changes on the agenda. The item 16 on wood burning, the presentation, in my conversations with Mr. Broadbent, we're going to push that off to the December 7th board meeting, the next board meeting. Also, we have another important closed session that I'm going to recommend that we move up right after the public comment item number 2 on non-agenda items. And then Mr. Broadbent will give his executive director report right after the closed session. So I'm going to right now move to item number 2, which is public comment on non-agenda items, before I'm going to urge us to go into closed session. And we're going to try to keep the closed session as short as we can so that we can come back. And I know there's a lot of people that have signed up to speak on a number of items on the agenda. So let's go to public comment on non-agenda items. I'm going to use my discretion as a chair to limit comments to 2 minutes per person, but ask people if you can be succinct and not to repeat what other people may have said, so that we could have as many people speak as possible. Ms. Hiratska, how many cards do we have for item number 2, public comment?
6.
So 6 cards. Because we know that there are a lot of people that will speak later, I'm going to limit it to 2 minutes. Could you please call the 6 cards? Okay.
Mr. Rooster? Whatever. It is 6. Okay. So David Gassman, Devorah Ansel, Susan Gustafson, Ernesto Arevalo, Roger Lynn, and Greg Reed. And if you speakers could please line up to my right.
Thank you. Yes, go ahead, sir.
Oh, okay. I'm David Gassman. I simply wanted to say I was here at the last general meeting, and we heard a number of very poignant statements by people from Chevron, from Tesoro, wherever they were. And I'm sure you'll hear more and have been hearing them for months about how they're concerned about their jobs. And I was thinking about that, and I was really very impressed by it, because in my own working life, I'm retired now, depending on when you start counting and what you count, I've had 5 or 6 or 7 jobs. And I trust everybody in this room, including those of you on the board, because you're elected officials, your jobs are uncertain, can relate to that. And as I thought about it, I said to myself, as important as that is, it's distressingly besides the point. It's sort of like talking to your ophthalmologist. I recently had cataract surgery, about the problems with your feet. I mean, And I'm really only telling you something, I think I'm only saying something that I think you already know. But the constant statements from people who are concerned about their job have to affect you. And the thing is, my point is that this body, this board, you, are not about saving jobs. I mean, in other contexts, on other boards, this is about saving lungs. Or to be a little less dramatic, a little less hyperbolic, about people being able to have good use of their lungs. And that's what we need to be thinking about. That has to be the primary concern. Employment, this is a secondary one. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gassman. Next speaker.
Good morning. My name is Susan Gustafson, staff environmental engineer at the Valero Benicia Refinery, and also a longtime resident of Martinez, California, living very close to the Shell Refinery. I've been reviewing a lot of the proposed regulations and some of the amendments that are sitting in front of all of us right now, and I just have something short and simple to say. I've been reviewing in particular Reg 2.5, that's toxics, and simply, it's just not ready for prime time for adoption on December 7th. This rule has fingers that go in and reach into and are affected by a lot of other rules that are in progress right now. And there's also complexities with this rule. I think that all these rules need to be worked in concert together. Because of the district's policy of no backsliding, no matter how unworkable a rule may turn out to be after it's adopted, it's really difficult to correct it after the fact. This rule was introduced earlier in 2016, and there have been no public updates on it until last month in October, when it was posted again. There were many changes. Some of those changes were from comments that were accepted, and it improved the workability of the rule a bit. But there were a lot of other changes that have been introduced to the rule since then. It still requires a bit of simmering. I ask this board to direct district staff to work these rules in tangent. This will reduce the probability of unintended consequences that may arise from a rule that is adopted too hastily. Reg 2.5 does not require imminent adoption, and there is time to get this right. Thank you for this consideration.
Thank you, Ms. Gustafson. Next speaker.
I'm going to wait until it restarts.
Yeah, go ahead, sir.
Oh, the time isn't done. You have to reset it first. Sorry. Just making sure. Good morning. I just want to speak about this process today. I think that it is slightly an environmental injustice that we have this in the mid of a week, during a work week, during a school week, in the morning. It is difficult for people to get here unless there are accommodations through their work. Now, why is it so important that the community be here? It is because we are the air monitors in our community. We're the ones who smell the air, who breathe in this air every day. And why are we the best at smelling this? It's because when we call the air district's number to report odors, and the inspector comes, they come to our site, and they use their nose to locate the source of the pollution of the smell. That is what they still use. We still use our nose to this point. And so when we breathe in this air, we can't tell exactly how much particulate matter there is, how much benzene, how much toluene, whatever chemical compound you're looking for. But we feel it, and we see it in how many times we go to the hospital for asthma emergency department visits. We feel it when we give our children asthma medication. I felt it when I took my first asthma test. And I feel it when I hear people say that they were born with asthma and they're feeling it every day. This process needs to be more inclusive, and I hope that changes can be made to be more equitable when we are addressing these issues in our communities. I encourage you to continue the processes that you're doing. I know that there is this work to communicate with and engage community members, but I hope that you will push forward, especially during these times when even I feel distrustful of my country.
Ernesto, what is your community or your city?
I am from East Oakland in the Flatlands.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Good morning, Director of the Board.
Morning.
My name is Greg Reed, and I'm here to represent Chevron Richmond Refinery. I've been an employee there for 11 years. I've worked in operations and other fields and also with maintenance, and now I'm currently in the Health Environmental Safety Department with compliance. Many of my coworkers would like to be here, and I'm fortunate enough to kind of be their voice. I would ask that any rule or regulation that is adopted, especially with us having to be diligent with compliance, that I would ask the board to really take your time, make sure you look at the facts, and not be swayed by those who have their own agenda. I would ask that you would consider the impacts that it has on not only the city of Richmond, but also the other areas that impacts. The refinery is much more than just people that work there, as the man mentioned before. I think of the people that own the small businesses around the refinery that I talk to and eat and frequently visit with every day. The roots run very deep there. And so I just ask that pay attention to the facts. Don't let emotions or somebody's argument get in the way of what we need to do. I understand there's a lot of pressure for regulations to be approved for us to reduce emissions. But I also understand that we have huge energy demand, and that does not make for an easy fix or an easy solution. So I understand the position that you're in, but I also understand that there's many people that are not able to be here to hear the deliberations that are going forth. So please keep that in mind in your decisions that you make. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Reed. Next speaker.
Good morning, members of the board. Chair Maher, Roger Lynn with Communities for a Better Environment. I'm the attorney of Communities for a Better Environment, and I just want to make the board aware of the Attorney General has produced the pamphlet detailing the state's opinion regarding the implementation of the Brown Act. I want to read four pertinent parts. First, the act represents the legislature's determination of how to balance public access to public meetings on the one hand and the need for confidential candor debate and information gathering on the other. Second, the legislature has established a presumption in favor of public access to information. Third, the Attorney General next points to court opinions that have also decided that exceptions to open meetings are to be construed narrowly, and that is incorporated into the government code. So if no narrow exception for a closed session can be found, the matter must be heard in public regardless of its sensitivity. Fourth and finally, and most importantly and relevant to what community worker, public health, environmental, academic, and other groups have been coming to this agency for over 4 years, the purpose of the pending litigation exception to open meetings is to permit the governing body to, and I emphasize, receive legal advice and make litigation decisions only. It is not to be used as a way to reach non-litigation-oriented policy decisions. Said in another way, closed session discussions classified as pending litigation must only be geared towards litigation discussions. Closed session discussions must not be used to guide non-litigation policymaking or district rulemaking. We will speak more to this issue during the agendized item for Rule 1216. For which reason, and others that my colleague will next elaborate upon, we request the board to move item 1216 ahead of closed session.
Thank you, Mr. Lynn. Next speaker.
Good morning, board members. My name is Devorah Ansell. I'm an attorney for the Sierra Club. I would like to request that the board take up item number 22, addressing rules 1216 and 1118 before closed session today. There are a lot of members of the public who have come out here today to speak about these rules in particular, many of whom are not paid to be here, and they left their jobs to be here. And in the spirit of fairness, we request that the board take up that matter before closed session. Also, we have concerns that part of the closed session today will discuss matters related to 1216. I want to echo what my colleague Roger Lynn has said about making sure that all matters that should be evaluated in a public CEQA process are appropriately reviewed and are subject to public comment. Since there might be matters related to 1216 discussed in closed session today, we request that you move the public comment on the rules before then so that the board can consider a public comment on those rules during closed session. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any other speakers? So then we'll close public comment. Let me just say that as the board chair, I'm urging us to go into closed session now, but I know a request has been made from CBE and the Sierra Club to pull the executive director's report, item 22, before closed session. And I'd just like to open this up for suggestions from colleagues. Director Mitchell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I understand the request, but there's an assumption that we are discussing items beyond litigation in closed session. And we as elected officials all understand the Brown Act. I take that role very seriously in closed session. We do not discuss policy items. We discuss litigation items, and we get legal advice. And so that is the purpose of the closed session. I see that item 22 is the report of our executive officer, and that is on the status of 1216. It is not on the litigation related to 1216. So I would, I appreciate the audience's request, but we're talking about litigation items, and that will help inform the rest of our discussion. So I would recommend that we follow the agenda and go into closed session.
Or actually, we are having the executive director's report right after the closed session.
Okay, then I'm sorry. I meant relative to the public comment.
So any other comments? Director Barrett and then Director Kaplan.
Well, I think it might be a good question to ask the executive director if there's any reason that we need to have the closed session before he gives his report. Because if there isn't, then I don't see why it would matter.
Director Kaplan? And then to Jack.
Well, I mean, this issue comes up repeatedly at our meetings, and so I think we should consider it not only in terms of today's agenda, but more broadly, that people come here to speak at the meetings, they sit and wait, and then they sit and wait much longer because we take closed session before the public things that the public has schlepped here at often great effort to do. So I think this isn't just about today, but in general, we might want to consider that closed session should be at the end generally so that folks who come and have waited and have rushed to get here, you know, without suggesting that anything improper is happening in closed session, just in terms of inconveniencing the public, it's probably a good idea for us generally to have it at the end, unless there's some reason that we need it to be before an item, just for the sake of people who made a real effort to take their time to be here.
Thank you. So we're going to go to Jack Broadbent and then Vice Chair Nis. Jack, do you have any response?
Yes, I think this is in response to Director Barrett's comment and Director Kaplan. So under item number 22, I was simply going to provide the board with a status update of the rulemaking and where we are in the terms of the schedule, where we are with regard to the initial staff report or initial study and staff report that's out on the street, answer any questions. That's indeed what you see here under your paper version that you have in front of you. And answer any kind of questions. Beyond that, Mr. Chairman, I wasn't planning to do anything more as part of my report.
I think it's very straightforward. Director Nis?
As a reminder, and I've sat here for a long time, for the most part, we have always had closed session after the meeting has adjourned. But I think lately, because we have tended to go late and lose a quorum, it has been difficult to move forward. And so that's why we're doing it this way. I understand why Eric has done that. And some of us have said probably we should be meeting twice a month and not once a month. And I think that would help address that issue.
Thank you. As with discretion as a chair, I'm going to After listening to the comments, I think we should move forward with the closed session beginning. There's not scheming going on in closed session. There's important items that we have to cover, and I'm trying to be respectful of getting through the most important information from our legal counsel to our board. I think as Jack makes the comments after closed session on item 22, it still gives the public a time to comment on it, and there'll be public comment after, I think, item 22, and it's a very short update from our executive officer. So as a chair, I'm going to go to closed session, but my hope is that in 2017, 2018, moving forward, we think about the structure of the meeting so that as many people can be heard, but also so we can efficiently get to our decisions that we have to make as a board. So thank you to Director Mitchell's suggestions and others. So we are going to go into closed session. We're going to keep it as short as possible. Gene or Jack?
Mr. Chairman, you do have as many as what looks like 14 people that have asked to speak on the closed session items. So you would need to take their comments actually before you go into closed session. They've asked to speak on items 17, 18, and 19, which are the closed session items.
So then we are going to hear all of that right now. Okay. Before we go into closed session. So Ms. Hrotzka, let's call those 16, 17 names.
Okay, one public speaker has requested to speak on all three items related to the closed session agenda. So I'll have him go first. That's Mr. Stephen Nadell. And then others who wish to speak only on item 18, I have 18 cards. So should I just call the first six after Mr. Nadell? Okay. So I have Claire Broom, yeah. Charles Davidson, Janet Pye George, Nick Despota, Janet Stromberg, and Tom Lewis.
Thank you. So 2 minutes per person, and we'll do our best to keep it as concise as possible, please.
Hello, my name is Stephen Nadell, and I'm with the Sunflower Alliance. I want to express my appreciation to the board members who have been sensitive to the public's desire to speak here and not sit around for 5 hours waiting to speak. And so I appreciate your efforts to readjust your schedule. I just want to make a comment following up what both of the Sierra Club and CBE Legal Advisors have said. And that it's hard for me to understand how you can be discussing pending legislation, pending legal issues against a rule that is still under discussion and hasn't even been passed yet. So I think we need as open a process as possible, and I would appreciate I would appreciate more clarity about what the issues are that are actually under legal discussion, so that we are not speculating. And we are just asking for an open process. So I'll keep this comment short to that.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. Tom Lewis from Martinez. I simply wanted to remind you, I don't think it's necessary, that the community got their butts kicked last week in the elections, and you guys are going to be our last bastion, our last defense on environmental issues. You're not going to get help, obviously, from the federal sector. Industry won, the community lost, and I implore you to stand firm and protect us the way we expect you, the way you came into this these positions, I think hoping to protect us. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lewis. Next speaker.
Good morning, Chair Maher and board members. I'm Claire Broom. I'm a professor of public health at Emory University. Also, for 5 years, I was deputy director of the Federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. So I'm very familiar with the role of boards relative to the role of staff. And the reason I wanted to comment before the closed session is I think that the board has the potential and the responsibility to show real leadership in actually capping refinery emissions consistent with the new law, AB 197. I'm very concerned that the staff has not always been acting in good faith in implementing the board's direction. Specifically, I'm very concerned that the community worker proposal has submitted legal opinions as to why this is appropriate. They've submitted rebuttals to comments from the staff, but the staff arguments about the legal situation are in closed session. I don't think this is an appropriate open process. Secondly, I'm very concerned that one of the assertions of staff is that the local communities are not impacted by refinery emissions. This is based on their regional monitoring system, which does not include monitors in those communities. So that's a rather disingenuous statement. So I would like to think that your air district staff are fully responsive to board direction, but I would say it's extremely important that the board take their responsibilities seriously and put in the backstop of enforceable numeric caps on current refinery levels. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Janet Stromberg with 350 Bay Area. Good morning, board members. I want to first thank Director Niss for pointing out the historical record with regard to public closed sessions, having in the past been at the end of the meeting. I think that's an important piece of information to digest. I'd like to also say that there can't be any possible pending litigation on 1216 because it's not a rule yet. And I'm very disappointed that it's considered that closed sessions can't be at the end of the meeting because that would be after a hearing. And so there wouldn't be any votes that need to happen after that. So I think what Director Marr said, what Chair Marr said, was a little bit inaccurate. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Are there more cards?
Yes, I'll call the next six: Greg Karras, Andrea Soto, Janet Johnson, Ken Jones, Richard Gray, and Minda Berbeko.
I'm waiting for the reset. Greg Karras, CBE. People want to know and have a right to know why you're so worried about being sued over Rule 1216 when all it does, all on its face, is set limits that say refineries don't have to do anything different. They just can't increase the worst climate and local health impacting pollution. And encourage you to help us explain to people that we know why. It raises big questions. Will we let oil companies make our region the gas station of the Pacific Rim? Let them refine cheaper, higher-emitting oil to profit from that. Let them build the oil infrastructure that will pollute more for another generation in order to implement that. Will we let them divide us into closed sessions and open sessions and divide us in other ways and intimidate us to duck those real questions and the real open debate on those questions? Or will we stand together to demand transparency, the right to a full public analysis of these questions, as you have bravely demanded from your staff in recent months? We ask you to join us in that demand now. Put all of the factual information, especially the facts that will underpin any future legal decision, tell them to put that, all of that, into the EIR and do that today. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the board. My name is Andres Soto, and I'm with CBE in Richmond. And we're all up here speaking because You know, we have committed our time as community members, as advocates, to trying to work to improve the public's health, the public safety, worker health and safety through this public process. So as we encounter the Air District and the history of working with the Air District, especially the last few years, it is, you know, utterly transparent that we have grave disagreements with executive staff, their procedures, the way they've been working with us. You know it. We all know it. And so we have been coming out here asking you to try to be as transparent as possible. And as the gentleman from the Steelworkers Union, the people actually work in the refineries doing the operation, not all these people dressed up like they're really workers, that you know, they are really concerned about how you guys are going to be our firewall as we enter into this Trump presidency. And if you don't do it, then who's going to do it? I'm wearing this shirt today. I got it from the Maritime Workers Union of Australia. This is the indigenous Australian flag. Because they came out here on a tour because they're dealing with Chevron down there in a massive fracking project in the middle of the Indian Ocean, the Gorgon project, multi-billion dollar project. And they were out here trying to work with us to try to work in solidarity to try to put a stop to this madness that's going on. So we're asking you to actually do your job by helping us to be that firewall from what's coming down from Washington. And, you know, like I said, we're here to work with you, to help you, politically if necessary. But please don't fall for the okey-doke, and, you know, we don't really trust your executive staff. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Good morning. My name is Jana Johnson. I'm a 35-year resident of Richmond, California, and I'm with the Richmond Progressive Alliance. And I got a report this morning, the Chevron Way, Polluting California and Degrading Democracy, that was produced by the International Transport Workers in Australia, and it's coming out tomorrow. So I just wanted to quote a little bit of this in terms of, because as a Richmond resident, we have experienced how Chevron pollutes our democracy big time, and you're all probably aware of that. So according to latest data, in 2015, Chevron facilities in California emitted more than 11 million metric tons of GHG emissions, making it the largest corporate climate polluter in the state, with nearly twice the emissions of Shell and ExxonMobil combined. And it goes on to talk about the money. Oil industry lobbying expenses. Between the Western States Petroleum Association, of which Chevron is a member, and Chevron itself, between January 1st, 2009 and November 8, 2016, Chevron and WSPA spent a total of $73,527,005 on lobbying expenses. And if you don't think that they're not lobbying you directly and indirectly, well, I would be totally shocked. Okay. More than $61 million on contributions to California political candidates, initiatives, and lobbying expenses. That's Chevron expenses from January 2009 to November 8, 2016. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. Next speaker.
Mr. Chair.
Director Hagerty.
Yeah, I'd just like to say that Chevron did lobby me. They lobbied against me. They mailed a piece out in my district.
I was so lucky too.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Four pieces in mine. Hi, my name's Minda Berbeco. I'm the director of the San Francisco Bay Chapter of the Sierra Club. We have some significant concerns about the closed nature of this process, which has been outlined already by our community partners, as well as our lawyer, Devorah, earlier today. All the potential conflicts with the state laws and Clean Air Act should be subject to public discussion and the EIR. We're concerned that they're not doing so is going to create unnecessary delays, and we want to make sure that the public is included in these discussions and decisions aren't made in closed sessions without the community's voice. There are many people who could not be here today. 9 a.m. on a Wednesday for a potentially day-long meeting, and I hope you'll keep that in mind. So each of the 18 voices you're hearing right now, I hope you'll replicate that in your head. Is that a, times 100, times 1,000, times 100,000 people as well who might also have the opportunity to speak, but unfortunately we have to speak on their behalf. I also want you to keep in mind that the Sierra Club has 30,000 members here just in the San Francisco Bay Area, and we stand with our community partners in regards to our concern for this process and also our concerns about the refinery. Thank you.
Thank you. Let me just jump in really quickly to say that I'm the outgoing chair. I strongly urge as the incoming leadership that we think about, as John Gioia did when he was chair, moving meetings around to different affected frontline communities so that there's stronger public participation. Also, the timing of our meetings is another good suggestion. But unfortunately, as the outgoing chair with one more meeting to go, there's not the time to do that, at least during this year. But I strongly agree with a lot of what people have said. Next speaker.
Yes, my name is Richard Gray. I'm with 350 Bay Area. Thank you for what you just said, Mr. Maher. It's really important that the public have an opportunity to participate in the in your process, even though it gets a little bit difficult. We want to know what matters are being discussed in closed sessions. I think there must be a way for you to indicate that on, or have the staff indicate that on the agendas, rather than leaving it up to guesswork. It appears that 1216 has been discussed in maybe three or four closed sessions at this point. Now, since there is no rule and there is no litigation, I think what Roger Lynn said earlier indicates you probably don't have the authority to do that in closed session. We've also seen the staff summarily cancel meetings on very short notice over the past few years, and then place items which they know the public is concerned about at the end of the meeting, as they did today. This kind of behavior, which includes repeated closed sessions, breeds mistrust on the part of the community. We really want to cooperate with you and with your staff. But these manipulations are really not helping. Thank you.
Thank you. Director Gioia.
So I just wanted to make a comment, because I know there's been a sort of a consistent theme about what's being discussed in closed session. And I think it's important, and I know this board understands this, to distinguish between talking about policy and facts versus talking about the law. And as you all know, we have been sued on every single rule we have adopted. I don't know any public agency that wants to telegraph to those who are going to sue on our rules our intimate legal discussions, because it is handing them more information to use in suing and challenging the rules. So, I can say, I know that we've had these very careful distinctions in closed session to say, when we're talking about policy, it's going to be out in open session. Now, some folks have raised issues about making sure the EIR fully analyzes all the factual issues, and I think we'll address that and talk about that later on when we get the update from Mr. Broadbent, because I think those are all important issues to make sure that the EIR addresses the factual issues. But EIRs don't really talk about the legal risks. Those are handled separately, in large part to protect an agency from those who would sue to challenge the rules. And as I said, every single rule we've adopted, industry has sued on those rules. And so I think we're being very thoughtful and very careful as we think this through and decide what we talk about in closed session and what we talk about. And I think the public would expect that, so that we're not handing over legal issues to those who want to undercut the rules we adopt.
Thank you, Director Gioia. Next speaker, or a number of other names.
Mark Roast, Devorah Ansell, Roger Lynn, Albert Kufner, Megan Zapanta, and Jeff Kilbretti.
Hi, Mark Roost, San Mateo, California. Emission caps are crucial not only for protecting our health and safety on the planet, but also for preventing the Bay Area from becoming a major international or outlet for tar sands crude oil. Refining tar sands crude produces much higher levels of both health-harming air pollution and greenhouse gases, With a cap on refinery emissions in place, a tsunami of tar sands into Bay Area refineries could be effectively prevented. But without uncompromising board action, staff will continue its delay, divert, obstruct, and kill mode. What should be a public, transparent, and democratic process is increasingly being carried out in secret sessions. So specifically, sort of nuancing what I just heard, in these closed sessions, I understand the Air District staff continues to argue that the emission caps are not legal. And it has abandoned its original commitment to a community-based forum in Richmond where frontline community members were to have weighed in on inclusion of an emissions cap in Rule 1216. By contrast, the staff will hold six widely publicized community forums on its alternative Rule 1118 for reducing health risks from pollutants. Instead of the promised forum on Rule 1216, the staff is offering two scoping meetings for comments on the technical scope of the environmental impact report. That's utterly unacceptable in light of disclosures of their closed-door lobbying on behalf of the refineries. We demand that our elected representatives on the board decisively prevent further staff obstructions. Separate the emissions cap from the Rule 1118 develop and hold a separate and independent vote. Reject secret sessions. We need open, transparent, democratic process for developing and voting on the emissions cap rule, including strategies about legal possible legal attacks. Order administration and staff to get on board with capping emissions and phasing out fossil fuels or get out. Instruct the agency's Human Resources Department to make compliance with this instruction a core part of administrator and employee evaluations from now on to end the resistance to the change on which our survival depends, which is a major flip to out of fossil fuels.
Thank you, Mr. Roos. Next speaker.
Good morning again, Devorah Ansel, Sierra Club. I want to emphasize my impressions of the most recent staff report addressing Rule 1216. The report attempts to make very generalized arguments that the rule is not legally justified. As far as I can tell, I have not seen any of these arguments substantiated anywhere. We request that any legal concerns about the rule be made public so that we have an opportunity to review and weigh in on those potential arguments. Of significant concern is the report's sweeping argument that the rule conflicts with the state's cap and trade program. The report simply assumes the future existence of cap and trade despite the fact that its future is highly uncertain, and it is not clear whether it will be readopted under SB 32 and in what form, or whether it will require a vote of two-thirds of the state legislature. The board cannot simply throw out the rule on the basis of a potential conflict with a policy that may or may not exist in the future. Regardless, this board has the authority and duty to regulate and cap harmful greenhouse gas emissions and PM2.5 from refineries, whether or not cap and trade exists in the future. My final point today is about the state's recent enactment of AB 197, which calls on regulators to achieve the state's new, more ambitious greenhouse gas emission reduction targets by considering the impacts of greenhouse gases and toxic pollutants on California's most disadvantaged communities, and prioritizing regulation that results in direct emissions reductions of these harmful pollutants from stationary sources like refineries. Rule 1216 is the type of regulation that AB 197 prioritizes. The most recent staff report fails to mention AB 197 even once, and the obligation of regulators under that law. Rule 1216 seeks to cap, not reduce, greenhouse gas and PM2.5 emissions, which is precisely the type of regulation that this board must adopt to obtain greenhouse gas emission target reductions and to improve the lives of this region's most disadvantaged communities. You must consider these critical issues in the EIR.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Thank you, members of the board. Roger Lynn again with Communities for a Better Environment. Two quick things. First, I want to emphasize that the emission caps only really look at two pollutants, greenhouse gases and particulate matter, the NOx and the SOx, both particulate matter precursors. So only those two. And the second thing, CEQA Guidelines Section 15125D. It provides that an EIR shall discuss any inconsistencies between the proposed project, this rule, and applicable policies and plans such as a state implementation plan or the state's climate policies. Again, the guidelines say the EIR shall discuss any inconsistencies. In regards to particulate matter, in this district, we're not an attainment. So the Air District has a state implementation plan that includes several provisions of the Clean Air Act that various commentators and staff suggest conflict with the adoption of emission caps. We disagree. For instance, the Clean Air Act includes the New Source Review permit program that says that permits to construct and operate may be issued if the correct amount of offsets are provided for. The staff report, on the other hand, says that the district must allow pollution to increase if offsets are provided for. On that note, we also disagree with staff's outrageous suggestion that refinery pollution does not disproportionately impact low-income communities of color or refinery fence line communities. In any event, the legislature, through the CEQA process, has set up a mechanism to vet any of these perceived conflicts. These are not questions subject to closed session deliberation, but must instead be included in the draft EIR to allow the public and the board to see both sides of the argument and independently decide whether or not to adopt this proposed rule. We respectfully request the board to direct staff to pay particular attention to the CEQA guidelines in specific regard to the relevant portions of the Clean Air Act and the state's climate policies.
Next speaker, Ms. Zapanta.
Good morning. My name is Megan Zapanta. I'm a community organizer with the Asian Pacific Environmental Network in Richmond, California. I work with community members who are immigrants and refugees who have fought tirelessly over the last several decades for accountability and transparency from both the corporations like Chevron that have been polluting the health and safety of our community for decades, as well as from the government and public agencies that are supposed to be protecting us and protecting our air, including this very agency. And so passing refinery rules that limit emissions in a timely and transparent way is utmost priority for our members, as well as for the greater Richmond community that they come from, and for the and to whose very health and safety and lives are on the line. If you talk to our members, and they ask us, can we actually go see the refinery? Can we actually go? Because they don't trust. You know, they don't trust what's happening after decades and decades of explosions, of health impacts, and so. So I think the more as transparent as this process can be, and as much as possible for us to understand as the community and respond to the legal implications of passing timely and transparent refinery rules that really limit emissions, is really important to our members. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Good morning. My name is Jeff Kilbreth. I'm with the Richmond Progressive Alliance. I wanted to talk on this issue because the notion of anticipated litigation kind of says it all. Rule 1216 is fundamentally a legal question. By my count, I've now got 9 legal issues that have been pointed out or suggested in conversations with staff, some of which make sense to me as being real, some of which don't make sense to me as being real. But the point is, the decision about 1216 is overwhelmingly an analysis of legal questions. So by definition, it's very important that the legal questions be fully analyzed, rigorously analyzed, by a combination of district lawyers, but also maybe other lawyers. So right now, the staff report makes assertions that there are a lot of legal problems, but there's nothing in the staff report that allows you to sink your teeth into the actual legal questions and come to your own decision about whether something is valid, you know, or not. And that doesn't allow us to perhaps shape 1216 to be more legal, you know, better regulation. So this is a big deal. So I guess what I'm saying is there is no discussion of 1216 of any value, actually, without tackling the legal questions. So the idea that anticipated legal issues would be a closed session thing is just really wrong. Okay, thank you.
Next speaker.
Al Kiefner, Western Service Workers Association in West Oakland. Are we speaking, I'm new to this, are we speaking on 18 or 22?
So
July 18th. Great, thank you. Okay. What are caps on emissions? Isn't that a condom to prevent emissions that will give disease to, well, in this case, the community, Constance community, by Chev Ronald, a very rich, very attractive, lives in a McMansion in Richmond, and sought after by many, many women, except Constance community. He has a friend named Stefan Staff, who's also an acquaintance of and a close associate of Bonita Board, who's present here at this time.
So, sir, we're talking about our closed session in this public comment period.
We're talking about closed session, right. So Stefan Staff goes secretly and closed in a private meeting to Bonita Board and says, Chevron Ronald is okay. He's not going to cause you any disease. You can have relationships with him. Trust him. Before you get the medical report, in this case, Rule 11-18. And so, should Bonita Board trust Stefan Staff? Or should they wait until, or should Chef Ronald use condoms or caps on his emissions until the report back from the doctors on
how many people will actually die from those emissions is
complete?
Thank you.
Some analogies are hard to understand.
Next speaker.
Thank you.
I think I understand.
I would like to recall Nick Despota and Ken Jones, who did not come up, so I'm giving them a second chance to speak. I also have Corey Van Gelden, or Van Gelder, Nancy Queller, and Laura Gracia.
Thank you. If anybody's name has been called, please come forward. We're going to close public comment in a moment.
Hello. Hello, board. This is my first time speaking here. I live in San Rafael, and I'm a teacher, and I've been having my students follow a lot of the climate actions that are happening specifically right now. We're following what's happening in Morocco with the COP22, and how this relates to the open session is they're so curious to be really understanding what's happening here in relation to what's happening there. And it's very hopeful that in the discussions now in Morocco, there is a lot of acknowledgement of the environmental racism that is being recognized, that who is actually taking the brunt of the environmental degradation worldwide. And we have an example right here with our refineries in Richmond. So I really hope that they can have the pride of their area to be really addressing this, and something down like that they can relate to here that's connecting with what's happening in the world, and be involved and know, like, have sessions that they could really be aware of what's happening on all levels, the legal levels, and the rest of it. So thank you.
Thank you for being such a great teacher. Thank you. Next speaker. So if your name's been called, just please come forward. It doesn't have to be in the order that they were called.
Greetings, board members. My name is Laura Gracia. I'm the youth organizer with Communities for a Better Environment. As one of my colleagues mentioned, there are a lot of voices that are being ignored here today. A lot of our young folks are in school right now. It's Wednesday at 9 a.m. A lot of their parents are at work and can't miss work. So what I did is we comprised a couple of interviews for people that, you know, really had something to say to all of you, and we have some images that we'd really like you to see. Thank you. Just 1 second.
Caps, not comps? What does that mean? Caps, not comps. That's pretty good.
We're trying to press play. Here it is.
Hold on.
Things weren't actually normal. And when the Chevron refinery blew up, it didn't concern me nearly as much as I think it would today. After seeing the refinery spew smoke into the air on such a regular basis, it didn't really seem out of the ordinary. What I'm trying to get at is the huge presence of the big oil has changed our perception of what is okay and acceptable, and we need to reverse this. When I was 7, I was diagnosed with asthma. The doctor couldn't tell me why I suddenly couldn't breathe as well as I used to. He just knew that I couldn't. It wasn't until last year, when I was working as an intern for the Sierra Club, and I started to learn about the effects of particulate matter on the body, and it all started to make sense. I live in a small valley positioned perfectly between the Chevron refinery in Richmond, the Rodeo refinery, and the Martinez refinery. I get smoke and pollution from the refineries pretty much no matter what way the wind blows. When the Richmond refinery exploded, our valley was filled with smoke for days. Living with air like this isn't normal. People shouldn't have to live with air like that, with the potential to get sick or even worse, just because oil refineries don't want to spend the money to reduce their emissions.
Greetings, board members. My name is Alex Cohen, and I'm an intern with Communities for a Better Environment. Over the past couple of years, I've been working on initiatives to improve air quality in the Bay Area, and I've come to realize the dangers that increased refinery emissions would bring to our community. From my own experiences talking to families around the Phillips 66 refinery in Rodeo, I've seen firsthand the impact of dirty fossil fuels. Last spring, I took a walk around a park in one of Rodeo's neighborhoods. Looking over the ridge that the park sat on, I could see a big black pile of dust. Later came to term this as Phillips Petco pile, which sat halfway between the park and the freeway. Nothing was covering the petroleum coke, and had the wind been blowing that day, I couldn't imagine where it would have spread. A week later, when conducting health surveys in Rodeo, a local resident pointed out to me that the soot had accumulated on some of the doorsteps. This is when I first noticed what it meant to be living near a refinery. Despite all I had seen in Rodeo, the average person I spoke to on the street seemed defeated, skeptical that regulations would ever be put in place, let alone an emissions cap. And part of me agreed with them. The reality is that refinery communities like these have been subject to the will of big oil for so long, they don't know anything else. Living and working in bad air has become normal to them. When I was growing up, the facilities at Chevron were just the scenery on the side of the road. If we can change the perception that burning fossil fuels in the midst of dense communities is okay, then we can start to improve the livelihoods of those affected most.
Lauda, how many more people are interviewed?
Saving thousands from asthma, lung complications, and the many other effects of particulate matter. My generation will have to spend our whole lives dealing with the impact of fossil fuels and the changes they will have brought to our air quality, our economy, and our climate. The least we can do is set a limit on how much change we're willing to allow. As a student, concerned citizen, and believer in a cleaner future, I urge you to accept Rule 1216.
Great. Thank you so much, Laura. Thank you. Next speaker.
So hello, my name is Nancy Cuellar. I'm a resident of Richmond. I'm also a member of CBE, and I'm here to speak on behalf of people who weren't able to come. So originally, I'm from Southeast Los Angeles, and that's primarily people of color and low wage, which is similarly like Richmond. And so I've known bad air quality. I've lived it all my life. And when I was younger, I was actually at risk of getting asthma. We had to get earlier inhalers, and inhalers do cost a pretty heavy penny for people of color and people who have low wages. So according to the Asthma and Allergy Foundation of America, and the average is $3,300 that people have to pay for their asthma inhalers and medical attentions, and that's for a student who has continuous loans, that's still a lot of money to pay. And I still, I'm trying to pay the school while I'm trying to get educated, and I don't really need to be paying medicine and for my own health. So people of Richmond have commented about the smells around the community. I have similar evidence because I've the smell of rotten eggs is really terrible. And, like, the company responsible for the pollution in my city is literally six blocks away. And it's within the vicinity. There's one high school, one middle school, six elementary schools, and two parks. And it's similar in Richmond because these communities are literally the backyards of many of the refinements here. So just like how I've been hearing lots of people. Oh, sorry. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cuellar. Thank you. Next speaker.
Hello, my name is Nick Despota. I live in Richmond. In September, I stood here and cited findings from new research brief from UC Berkeley and USC and others that established that localized emissions from the largest facilities, including refineries, have increased in 2013-14 relative to 2011. In May 2015, CARB Director Richard Corey stated before this board that local air districts can take action beyond those required by AB 32 to protect the health of local communities. And now, State Law AB 197, Section 5, authorizes programs aimed at direct emission reductions in order to protect public health, direct emission reductions being exactly the kind of caps sought by the community worker proposal. So you have, one, solid evidence of the failure of current regulations to reduce localized emissions in recent years, two, ample documentation of the disproportionate health impacts on local communities, and three, confirmation of your legal authority to control emissions through direct regulation. What may be lacking is the will to use that authority to protect the health of all communities, including those most impacted by refinery operations. And I'm saying that now rather than under item number 22, because I fear by the time we get there, many of you will have had to leave. So once again, I'm very concerned about the shielding of conversation about the legal requirements under a closed session. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Despota. Next speaker. Are there any other speakers?
Good morning. My name is Samantha Klein, and I am a student at UC Berkeley studying environmental science. And in my coursework, I have learned over and over again about how dangerous refinery and other industrial pollutants are to people's health, and also how dangerous they are considering their contributions to climate change. I was not paid to be here today by a corporation. I am here missing vital study time because I am a person that simply cares about healthy and clean air for the Richmond community and also for the surrounding communities, including Berkeley. Today I'm advocating for the approval of pollution limiting measures because it is imperative that we put a cap on emissions for greenhouse gases and other damaging pollutants. I'm scared for my future as a young person considering the recent presidential election, and I just want to say that we must act locally to protect our air and our climate. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Klein. Next speaker, are there any other speakers? Then public comment is closed on the closed session, and now we will go into closed session. We'll try to keep this as short as we can. So we're going to recess the meeting for closed session now. Thank you, everyone. We're going to start in a moment. It's 11:40, so in a couple minutes. So I think most of us are back. Let me reconvene the meeting. And we are now on item 12, committee reports. We're going to race through these and then
we need a report out
of the closed session. Yeah. Mr. Bunger.
On items 17 and 18, there was no reportable action. And on item 19, which is the Valero Refining Company California case, the board authorized staff to pursue an appeal of the Superior Court decision.
Thank you, Mr. Bunger. Now to committee reports. We're not going to read the summaries except for the nominations committee.
Mr. Chairman, I'm afraid you have to. Did you want to cover the consent calendar?
Yes.
Sorry.
Forgot about the consent calendar.
Sorry.
So consent calendar has been moved and seconded. So moved by Haggerty, seconded by Groom. Consent calendar, are there any items to sever? Seeing none. It's been moved and seconded. Colleagues, can we approve the consent calendar without objection?
Yes.
Thank you. Now on to the committee reports. We're only going to read the nominating committee report. Public Engagement Committee, Chair Ross, are there items to move on that report? Mobile Source Committee, Chair Haggerty, a number of items.
So how do you want me to do this? You want me to just say I move the Mobile Source Committee
yes.
report? There, I did it.
So it's been moved by Haggerty, seconded by Hudson. Can we approve without objection? Thank you.
Thank you. There's a lot of big words in it.
And next, the nominating committee of the board met this morning at 9 a.m. The committee, which consists of five members of this body, nominated for board officers of 2017, Liz Niss as chairperson for 2017, Dave Hudson as vice chairperson, and Katie Rice from Marin County Board of Supervisors as secretary. I just wanted to ask Supervisor Groom if she could comment a little bit on the rationale of the nominating committee.
Sure. Thank you, Chair Maher. The nominating committee felt that Supervisor Rice would make a good secretary. She's very analytical. She's very thoughtful. She's always well prepared. She rarely misses meetings. She spent a fair amount of time on some of our committees, including that of Budget and Finance. So we felt that she was fully prepared to move into the order of officers.
I will add.
A little more about the choice.
I just did.
No, about the balance and so forth that you looked at.
Yes, we did look at balance. Actually, it's been over 20 years since there's been a member of the officers from Marin County. And we are also been very interested in gender parity. And so we're trying to move more women into the line, but not forgetting that there are very capable and talented men on this board as well.
And I'll just add that our legal counsel gave us good advice. We have discretion on a lot of this, but there's tradition of city, county, and I think gender balance to geographical representation to city, county, I think we considered a lot of that. And thanks to the wisdom and experience from the members of the nominating committee on that. We had a number of really great, strong candidates, but I think our recommendation of Katie Rice is we all support that. With that, let me ask that I move that the Board of Directors approve the recommendations on the nominating committee. It's moved and seconded. Are there any comments? Okay. Then can we do that without objection, colleagues? Thank you. Next.
Congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations, Nicholas. And Director Hudson and Ms. as well.
Hudson was in that motion.
You got a tie on the day.
Next item is Ad Hoc Building Oversight Committee. I'm not going to read the report, and there's no recommendations that need to come out of that. And now we're moving out of order item number 22, the report of the executive officer. Can we do that without objection? Jack?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, good morning again. Let me do two things. One, as part of my report, I normally would talk to you about air quality, where we are in terms of our attainment status. I'll just mention that we are now in the midst of our wood smoke season. Started that on November 1st, and so far we have not had any days where we needed to call a Spirit of the Air day, Spirit of the Air tonight. And so we don't have any violations of the federal or state PM standards so far this year. So let me talk to you about what you've already heard from a number of commenters here today, and that's about our rulemakings. We have two rulemakings underway, which are, for everybody in the public, two rules that are covered by one EIR, one socioeconomic impact report. The first is Rule 1118, which is our risk cap and reduction rule. That rule will seek to be able to establish future effective rule, or I should say risk levels for all facilities in the Bay Area. It's a stepwise reduction where they will have to meet a 25 in a million standard first, and then ultimately 10 in a million standard. It's a what we believe is a very aggressive rulemaking effort to specifically protect communities in the Bay Area relative to toxic air contaminant risks. The other rulemaking we have underway is also Rule 1216. This rule will cap the refineries, and it is based on the proposal that we have first generated by the a number of community groups, not the least of which include CBE and their associated organizations. Both rules are on track. Both rules are moving forward, and this schedule that's before you have some very key dates. And I just want to mention for you that we developed the project description, it was set on August 19th. We had the final notice of preparation was published in October, and I think the draft staff report was released for comment on the 27th of October. We're in the process currently of holding workshops, and we have the initial study out on the street along with the draft staff report, and are receiving a lot of comments. The comments that we're receiving from all the affected industries, the public, community groups, all of which will be taken in, changes will be made, and that's the way our process works in terms of our rulemaking, that, and I know all of you on the board know that. Some very key dates in the future, one of which is December 2nd. That's when the comments on the initial study will be coming into the staff, as well as the CEQA notice of preparation. Subsequent to that date, you see here on this slide, we're going to be moving forward with essentially preparing our draft EIR and our socioeconomic impact report, and we expect to have it out actually and into the public's hands in March of next year. All of which is going to be moving forward so that you can consider these two rules as part of one board adoption hearing, board consideration and adoption hearing in May of next year. I did want to mention one important development that I think will be informative to our rulemaking efforts here at the district. The California Resources Board is putting together their scoping plan under AB 32. The scoping plan itself is actually a revision to the scoping plan that has been out on the street, and that scoping plan essentially implements AB 32, the landmark greenhouse gas legislation that really defines the climate change program here in California. That scoping plan will be speaking to how we'll be able to achieve the 2030 targets, ultimately 2050 targets, but it really does have this midterm target in mind. And it will contain a whole series of strategies. One important legislation that was adopted last year was AB 197, 197 called upon the CARB to prioritize direct regulation of the cap sources. Now, the cap sources are all the different sources that are under the cap and trade program. And very explicitly, what 197 means for the refinery community here in the Bay Area is that CARB is going to be developing direct regulations, meaning regulations that will seek to be able to reduce greenhouse gases within the fence line itself. Those are going to be important measures for the scoping plan, and ultimately those measures will be moved forward as part of rulemaking by the state of California. And we think that that's important information. We want to understand that development and see if it has any relevance or any important how we could basically either be in complement to or implement those measures that are going to be in the scoping plan. But it remains to be seen. So a draft of that scoping plan will be out on the street later this month, actually early December, with a refinement of that scoping plan in January or possibly early February. But ultimately, we are told that they plan to have the scoping plan adopted by the California Resources Board in April of next year. I wanted to mention that to you because, as I said, it's an important element of really the changing landscape with regard to how do we move forward in terms of seeking reductions of greenhouse gases here in California relative to all of the sources that we regulate, as well as the state regulates under the cap and trade program. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to conclude my remarks. I wanted to keep them brief, and I'll be more than happy to answer any questions.
Director Gioia, and let me ask Marcy Hrotzka, how many comment cards do we have?
48.
So board members, please keep that in mind. Director Gioia.
Real quick, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, Director Haggerty.
Just to remind you, MTC is here at 1:30. Is that correct?
Thank you. Director Gioia.
A comment and then sort of also two couple comments. First, on Jack's point regarding the Air Resources Board, just a little, we'll know more specifics when the scoping plan is actually out in draft form later this month. But essentially, it would call for strategies that would achieve enhanced refinery efficiency with either a 20 or 30% GHG reduction by 2030. That's sort of the ARB staff is, well, again, we'll have it on the street, some specifics that would achieve, you know, anywhere between a 20 and 30% reduction in GHGs at refineries by 2030 and potentially a 25% reduction across the industrial sector as well. So that's going to be, and the final adoption of anything wouldn't occur till April or May, and it's really in line with achieving the 2030 goal. The other comment I was going to make, Jack, there were a number of issues raised this morning. I suspect we'll hear it again in these comments about some need for some further factual analysis in the EIR, and I know we've gotten a letter or two on that. Can you just maybe, because I think that may also address some of the concerns that will get raised by speakers, and sort of maybe talk about how you will look at what's been presented to ensure that the EIR is going to have a thorough factual analysis of all these issues that are being raised. Because that may, I mean, those who come and speak, you know, who are speaking consistent with the letter that was sent by a number of folks, you know, maybe if they hear also that what you're going to address in the EIR, that may have some comments be shorter.
Let me be very clear. We are very open and are welcoming the comments that are going to be made and provided to us relative to additional factual information in terms of this EIR. Some of that information has come in. We're looking at it, but we're going to make sure we're going to be as thorough and comprehensive as possible with regard to the information that's out there in developing this regulation for your consideration. Jean, did you want to?
That is the purpose of sending out the notice of preparation and the initial study, to gather the information from the public, any stakeholders, about the environmental impact areas that need to be examined in the environmental impact report, and what information is available to bring to bear on that. So I think that is exactly the kind of thing that this process envisions.
Right. So the other issue was raised that to the extent that there are some assumptions or factual issues you identify that relate to legal issues, you'll make sure that the factual issues, not necessarily the legal issues, but the factual issues that may underlie some of the legal concerns, that you will have a full analysis on those factual issues to determine if those are indeed the facts.
That's correct, Director Jouett.
Okay. Any other comments? And we can always add at the end anything further.
So I see no other comments. Let's start on the 48 comments. Former Chair Bates has suggested that people can yield their time to others. I'm going to say, as the chair, 1 minute per person. We're going to lose our quorum fairly quickly. So 1 minute per person, if you can do your best. And if you want to yield your time to somebody else, just mention that at the podium, too. So Ms. Hrotzka.
Rebecca Auerbach, Steve Nadell, Stephen Yang, Roger Lin, Greg Karras, and Andre Soto.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, if I may,
yes,
just
Director
so
Kaplan.
We could be clear, are we anticipating taking any sort of vote on this today?
No, we just had a report from our executive officer, and there's no vote on this today.
Right. And so with us taking no action, the CEQA analysis of both items would then continue.
Yes.
So I just wanted the speakers, before they all freak out about that, to understand that we're not voting on this today.
And as Director Joya and Ms. Rogenkamp mentioned, there's going to be a full analysis of disproportionate impacts to other issues as well. Next speaker.
I'm Rebecca Auerbach, very scared.
Oh, no, you just turned it off.
There you go.
Rebecca Auerbach, very scared Richmond resident. I will just take a few seconds of your time. 2017 is going to be the year that we were all afraid of when this board voted in 2012 to pass a simple backstop against increased emissions. Please allow no more delays. We need you. Thank you.
Charles Stephenson from Hercules. In contrast to staff assertions, the proposed refinery emissions cap rule 1216 would allow Bay Area refineries to process more crude than they processed during the 2015 Torrance outage. Rule 1216 would allow California refineries to use more of their short to midterm production capacity during an outage than they can reliably use for much more extended periods. In fact, during such an outage, California refineries can collectively produce roughly 12% more gasoline and diesel than the domestic fuel market demands from them. Moreover, out-of-state gasoline could easily be reformulated by in-state refineries to supplement any amount of in-state needs during a major refinery outage. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Hello again, Steve Nadell from Sunflower Alliance. We know that oil refining is the largest industrial emitter in the Bay Area and under the Ayers District's jurisdiction. And we know it's going to get worse if the extreme crudes come in. As people have been saying, just about lately, the name floated out for Secretary of the Interior is Sarah Palin. Just think about that. So we need you to put a wall around the Bay Area, a wall that's going to protect us from the extreme crudes that the refineries want to bring in to the Bay Area. But enough about what needs to be done. I want to address a lot of the staff misconceptions that have been going into the EIR as quickly as I can. 1216 is not in conflict with 1118. It's a necessary backstop. Similarly, it's legal. It's nothing in AB 32 that prevents you. Okay, we're stuck to a minute. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Nadell. Next speaker.
Good afternoon, Board of Directors. My name is Stephen Yang, and I work at the Richmond Refinery. Separately considering 1118 and 1216 makes no sense. For the last few years, other stakeholders have alleged refinery emissions are the reason for health problems. In response, staff recommends 1118. Other stakeholders recommend 1216, which caps refinery greenhouse gases and criteria pollutants. Yet we know from the ARB and OEHA that health risk is primarily driven by diesel PM. of which refiners are not a significant source, and therefore 1216 will not address? And what of co-pollutant benefits of capping greenhouse gases in 1216? Those co-pollutants won't be diesel PM and won't reduce health risk. Just because 1216 is a poorly written rule and ineffective at addressing health risk does not mean it should be separately considered. 1118 and 1216 are alternatives for addressing the one central issue of health risk and should be considered together. The only reason you would consider 1216 on its own would be to be complicit with an agenda to shut the refineries down.
Thank you, Mr. Yang. Next speaker.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Andres Soto, CBE. I'm not sure, but it sounded like a climate denier there. I'm here to talk about the issue of the workshops. And it says 4-6 workshops held, one of two scoping meetings held. My question is, where were these workshops held? How many members of the public attended those workshops? And how much comment did that really generate? Only because I know I've been to some of those workshops, and sometimes there's been more staff than members of the public. So I'm wondering how deep the penetration of these issues are actually getting out into the public through these workshops. And once again, we don't believe that if the sufficient number of comments come in as is expected, how these two projects can go forward together. And ultimately, we're looking at severance next month. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Soto. Mr. Lane.
Thank you, Board. Roger Lynn again. Two quick things in response to the Chevron comment. Just point out 1216, GHGs and particulate matter, 1118, tax, no GHGs, no particulate matter. And thank Director Joya for the direction to the staff today. And we want to clarify that the direction will avoid any further delay by ensuring that staff include all available factual information relevant to alleged legal conflicts with climate and permitting policies, then they have to be disclosed in the EIR for public and board discussion. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Lynn. Next speaker.
Greg Karras, I'm ceding my time to Claire Bloom. You haven't called her yet.
So do I take the time now or later?
Keep going. Just keep going, Ms. Bloom.
That's got to be a first. Greg Karras ceded his time to somebody else.
Go ahead. All right. Good morning, Chair Maher and directors. The reason that Greg has been generous enough to cede his time is because I'm in public health, and this is a public health issue. The concerns for preventing any increase in particulate ultrafine emissions on these affected communities is urgent. Time is of the essence, and that's why it is so critical that we keep to the schedule, and if there's any lag, that the two proposals be separated. 1216 is a backstop. It is providing a cap on current emissions so that the communities that are affected by refinery emissions will no longer have increases with the, for example, the three permitted projects which have occurred while we've been discussing this topic for refinery expansions. I'd also like to speak to the CARB webinar on the efforts to meet the 2030 target that Mr. Broadbent referred to. I listened to their webinar, and in addition to what Mr. Broadbent told you, it's also clear that they envision that it is fine to have refinery caps as well as cap and trade. That was one of their scenarios. So I think that's also important information for the board to have. So time is of the essence. You have the opportunity with 1216 to put a health backstop in place so that there will be no further increase in refinery emissions for these communities. Thank you for your leadership.
Thank you. Next speaker. Oh, another few names.
Kimberly Ronan, Don Cuffell, Paula Baker, Bob Brown, Devorah Ansel, Irene Suhami, Susan Gustafson, and Walt Gill.
Thank you. And if your name's been called, just please come forward. It doesn't have to be in that order.
Good morning. My name is Kim Ronan, and I am the environmental manager at the Valero Benicia Refinery. As a soon-to-be mother, I care about the quality of the air in which the community in which I live in. That's why I'm proud to work at a refinery that in 2011 invested $750 million to build a flue gas scrubber and two new crude furnaces to abate the coker and FCCU gases, which permanently reduced SO2, NOx, and PM emissions by thousands of tons per year. As part of this project, the Air District permitted Valero to increase its crude capacity following the district's permitting regulations and the CEQA process to produce transportation fuels that are compliant with California CARB regulations and for the nation. We at Valero work hard to be environmentally and socially conscientious and to provide a safe working environment for our workers and for our community. Draft 1216 proposes to impose numeric emission limits below what was legally permitted. Thank you.
Next speaker.
Good afternoon, board members. My name is Don Cuffell. I'm the Health, Safety, Environmental Director at Valero's Benicia Refinery. I have a question for you. Would you get on a plane with an unknown destination or buy a house sight unseen? Probably not, nor would I. And the reason is you want to know what you're getting into. You want to know what you're committing to. Industry is no different. We need regulatory certainty to plan for compliance. The proposed Reg 1118 does not define what the best available retrofit control technology is for toxics. It's important that the board direct staff to work with all stakeholders, not just refineries, but all stakeholders, to determine what the appropriate TBARCT is before the rule is adopted. Reducing risk, health risk from toxics is a worthy goal, so let's take time to get it right, and let's involve all stakeholders to make that definition ahead of time. Adopting a rule saying we'll fix it later, that hasn't worked so well. It's not a recipe for success. That's my specific ask. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cuffell. Next speaker.
Good afternoon, Chairman Maher and members. My name is Bob Brown. I'm with the Western States Petroleum Association. WSPA continues to support the staff recommendation to keep both Regulation 1216 and 1118 under the same EIR. We agree with the very clear recommendations from the California Air Resources Board, the Nonpartisan Advisory Council, and the AQMD staff to not pursue local GHG emission caps on refineries. Subject matter experts are in lockstep agreement that the local GHG caps will undermine statewide efforts to reduce GHG emissions. Staff's legal analysis indicates that Rule 1216 would likely be found beyond the Air District's authority and/or arbitrary and capricious by a court. Bay Area refineries are the cleanest and safest in the world, generating the cleanest fuels. WSPA and its board member and its member companies are committed to working with the Bay Area AQMD to develop credible and effective air quality regulations. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Next speaker.
Thank you, Deborah Ansel, again from the Sierra Club. I already made most of my points, especially about AB 197, and just want to also make the point that even though ARB is going to be developing their scoping plan and the methodologies to meet the 2030 greenhouse gas emission reduction targets, that this board will continue to have the authority, as it has in the past, to set caps on greenhouse gas emissions on stationary sources like refineries to protect our communities living near and working near those stationary sources. And I'd like to, in response to the previous comment, that any position that the ARB has taken in the past that might state that it is in conflict, that sort of position was put out there before SB 32 and AB 197 were passed, and I think the playing field is quite different now, and I just urge the board again to take AB 197 very seriously in setting this important rule. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Ansel. Next speaker.
Good morning. I'm Susan Gustafson, and I am a real refinery worker. My comments this morning focus on ongoing compliance certainty and Rule 1118 clarity. The proposed compliance language in Section 405 is open-ended and establishes a compliance uncertainty for business. In other words, compliance may never be achieved because the end goal may keep getting moved. A compliance requirement that may be randomly reset by the district and does not comply with the health and safety code is just bad policy. Regulations must be well-defined with clear compliance target, compliance certainty. And here's an excerpt. If information becomes available after initial APCO approval of the plan, the APCO may require a facility to update the plan. No compliance certainty for business. Proposed Regulation 1118 requires refinement to provide that compliance path forward before being adopted. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next speaker.
I'd like to call the next eight. I have Audrey Nelson, Glenn Turner, Sean Lee, Deborah Bayer, Janet Stromberg, Janet Johnson, Jan Warren, and Ken Jones.
Thank you. Go ahead, ma'am.
My name is Paula Baker. I'm a resident of Berkeley, and I'm not affiliated with any group that you've heard from here today. I'm a mom. I'm concerned. I'm also a sort of regular, rational person. I live in the world. I don't want to see Chevron leave the area, but I also want very, very much to see Rule 1216 separated from 1118, because I am one of a large majority of the people in my my people I know who believes that it's vital to protect us from the future refinery products of the bottom of the barrel oil that's coming. We don't want to see something that affects the way Chevron has to do business today. We feel like we're in a balance, but we're worried about what's coming. And the time is now to act to protect us, to put backstops in place that make the citizens of the Bay Area feel safe and comfortable.
Thank you, Ms. Baker. Next speaker.
Good morning. I would like to address Valero's proposed numeric caps in draft Reg 1216. Valero was treated differently than the other facilities when numeric caps were calculated in the proposed rule. 2010 was not included in Valero's baseline years. We request that the same baseline of 2010 to 2014 years be used for Valero as was used for the other facilities. Valero installed a flue gas scrubber in 2011. It was a significant reduction of pollutants, PM, NOx, SO2 in this very air basin. This investment is best of class. The very investment you are seeking from other facilities was already made by Valero voluntarily. Valero should be allowed to use the voluntary investment it already made. We urge the district to promote consistency and use the same baseline for Valero.
What was your name, ma'am?
Iran Suhami.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Glenn Turner from Sunflower Alliance, and I wanted to speak to the question of your staff here, who seem to be basically what we would call technocrats, and they have a lot of information, but I'm very concerned that they have not, or perhaps it is you who decides this, when does a real public forum happen? I have never seen anything large advertised. I've never seen anything that people could actually come to discuss their concerns. I know that there was some kind of very expensive $150 a person admission event that just seemed like a fundraiser for a new building, which is all fine and good. I'd like to see more public input. I'd like to see your staff perhaps adhere to the deadlines. I heard that the May of 2014 was a deadline that's long gone.
Thank you, Ms. Turner. Next speaker.
My name is Audrey Nelson. I'm a refinery planner at the Richmond Refinery for Chevron. I worked there for the last 9 years, and for the past 4 years, I've been involved with product scheduling out of the facility. AB 32 and low carbon fuel standard are effective in managing greenhouse gases from refineries, and we do not need an additional cap. This would be redundant to existing regulations. I'd like to share with you that in my job, I see the effects of AB 32 and low carbon fuel standards. At Chevron, we're blending more and more renewable products into our fuels each year, with both ethanol and renewable diesel being blended into our products after they leave the facility. When considering redundant regulations, I hope you'll consider that AB 32 and the low carbon fuel standards are indeed working as intended and causing real changes. I see them. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Nelson. Can I ask Ms. Rogenkamp or Mr. Broadbent or Ms. Rogenkamp, where were the various workshops held? I think there were 4 out of 6 so far, and there are a couple more, but where were they held?
Yes, Chair Murr. One was in Richmond on November 9th. One was in Oakland on November 10th. So in Richmond on November 9th from 5:30 to 8.
You're talking now, though, the risk rules. There were other meetings on the refinery rule earlier.
Earlier. For this round, there was one in Richmond on November 9th in the evening from 5:30 to 8. One in Oakland Thursday, November 10th from 5:30 to 8. San Francisco, Monday, November 14th, there was one from 5:30 to 8, but also the scoping meeting on the EIR was that afternoon at 2 o'clock. On Tuesday, November 15th, from 5:30 to 8. And this afternoon, another scoping meeting for the EIR for both rules at 2 o'clock in Martinez, and then the workshop from 5:30 to 8, also at the same location. And then Thursday, November 17th, from 5:30 to 8.
Thank you.
And Fremont, sorry.
Yeah. Thank you. Next speaker.
Good afternoon. My name is Sean Lee. I'm the Health, Environment, and Safety Manager at the Chevron Richmond Refinery. At last month's board meeting, I shared with you a guide to health risk assessments from OHEHA. I know that not everyone was here last month, so I brought some more copies to issue to you. The document is an easy read, so I wanted you to point out pages 9 and 10 on risk characterization. Cancer risk is compared to the overall risk of cancer in the United States population, which is 250,000 to every 1 million people. I also would like to share the Air Resources Board risk management guidance on stationary sources, which was shared last meeting as well. I also would like to point out that the diesel PM is the strongest cancer risk. Please take note, the San Francisco Bay Area has an ambient cancer risk at 800 in a million. I request that the board make informed decisions that govern health impacts. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lee. Next speaker. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Debbie Baer. I have been a Richmond resident for 25 years. I've also been a pediatric nurse for 36 years. And I have treated children with asthma who were sitting up. I've been blowing albuterol in their faces, and their faces were scared because they couldn't breathe. I just want to address what I see as a false dichotomy between rulemaking and jobs. Nobody is proposing to close a refinery. And in your closed meeting with the refineries, if you've had them, which I thought you did, was there any time when Chevron, who made over $2 billion a year on these refineries, said that they couldn't afford to spend a little more money on adhering to caps, which is, again, not lowering what they're doing, but not increasing. So with the people who come and say, I need my job, yes, you do need your job. And I don't think that we are threatening. If we cut Chevron's profits by as much as they spend on lobbying, don't worry. Okay, and the other thing I want to say, damn, it was good.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Janet Stromberg, 350 Bay Area. Rule 1216 is necessary because of discretionary loopholes in the Air District's new source review rule, resulting in decades of discretionary permit decisions biased toward refinery wishes. Thousands of other permitted facilities already have facility-wide caps because they don't have the political clout that the refineries have. As a result, requirements for new and modified sources have been more rigorously applied at their projects. I know this because I worked on Air District permit programs for 25 years. I also developed the Air District's Title V federal operating permit program. Title V would have allowed the imposition of caps based on implied permit conditions documented by district permit records. Such records have been used to justify limits on other industries, but not the refineries. We need the refineries to be as fully regulated as other Bay Area district rules.
Thank you. Next speaker.
I'd like to call the next eight. So I have Richard Gray, Minda Berbeco, Megan Zapanta, Jeff Kilbreth, Albert Kiefner, Eileen Boken, Laura Gracia, and Mark Roost.
Thank you. Go ahead, ma'am.
My name is Jan Warren. I am a member of the Interfaith Climate Action Network of Contra Costa County. As you're aware, we have five refineries in Contra Costa, so our county carries a higher percentage of health disparities due to refinery emissions. It is well documented that people living closer to refineries experience higher rates of asthma and cancer. My faith tradition honors all people. All people have a right to clean air. The air we breathe should not be determined solely by our bank account. Despite progress in reducing particulate matter levels and related health impacts, exposure to fine particulate matter remains the leading public health risk and contributor to premature death from air pollution in the Bay Area. It's past time that we have cleaner air rather than more spare the air days. 4 years of study is enough. Rule 1216 is reasonable and effective and would close a gaping loophole that has left facility emissions from oil refineries unlimited. We need to transition to a clean energy economy. No more.
Thank you, Ms. Warren. Thank you. Next speaker.
Good afternoon, Chair Maher and board members. My name is Walt Gill. I'm the government affairs manager at the Chevron Refinery. And regarding rules 1216 and 1118, we continue to support the staff's approach of evaluating these two rules in a combined EIR. And I want to mention, as far as the rule 1216, the district staff report says that this will not improve air quality in refinery communities and may not be consistent with both state and federal law. Greenhouse gases do need to be reduced and taken seriously, and progress is being made by the refineries, but caps are not the right approach. So thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Hi, I'm Jana Johnson, and I'm ceding my time. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Hi, my name's Minda Berbeco. Hello again. I'm the director of the San Francisco Bay Chapter of the Sierra Club. I see this really wonderful schedule set out here, and the thing that got my attention is the workshop. So I went to the scoping meeting on Monday, and we asked about community workshops. And it sounds like that there were for 1118, but there was no plan for any for 1216. And that's concerning to us, and that actually says to us that our concerns about community partnerships and working with the community to address these issues is not being taken into account and not being taken seriously. And I hope that's something that the board will take into account moving forward. I also want to remind you that there are many people represented here who could not be here right now due to their jobs, due to school, due to just concerns about transportation or their health issues, particularly those closest to the refinery. For the Sierra Club, this is personal. It is personal for the 30,000 members here. It's also personal for me as a
Keep going,
thank
please.
You. It's personal for me as a boss. I have some of my staff lives in the shadow of the refinery, and I'm concerned if they're not well and they're not healthy and they're unable to come to work. And I'm concerned because I'm also the mother of a 2-year-old son who happens to have the most monster cold you've ever seen in your life right now. And so the thought of hearing young people talk about having asthma because of the refineries, that's concerning to me. And I think about him in 10 years or in 20 years coming up here and having to say the same thing. It is on my mind, it is personal, and it should be personal and rather chilling to everyone in this room. I just want to add that we really encourage you to not allow roadblocks, illegal or otherwise, to slow this down. If there is any lag, we really encourage you to separate 1118 and 1216. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Richard Gray with 350 Bay Area. Oil companies are not going to self-regulate. They claim they have the right to increase emissions. We claim that you have the authority under California law to go beyond what ARB may do, including imposing a backstop on emissions, which 1216 would provide. Of course, the refineries will sue on 1216. They sue to overturn most of your rules. We beg you to challenge this industry on our behalf, not to close their operations or to lay off workers, but simply not to allow our health impacts to get any worse. This rule can take effect on adoption. The HR rule, which the staff puts forward as an alternative, will not address PM2 or GHGs, and any results may not come for years. If the industry really wants certainty, they should look to switch from fossil fuels to renewable energy.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Eileen Boken, San Francisco resident. The incoming administration is openly and blatantly anti-environmental. The people of California and the Bay Area now look to their own government to solve for strong environmental leadership. The Bay Area air quality management process, does it demonstrate strong environmental leadership? This process has been dragging on for years. Some say it's been intentional. The spotlight is now on you, and that spotlight will only intensify. This is no longer business as usual. There is no political will at the federal level, so it must come from you. Please move 1216 forward now, and sever it from 1118. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Boken. Next speaker.
Al Kiefner, Western Service Workers Association in West Oakland. I was in the No Coal in Oakland campaign, and we canvassed the neighborhoods in West Oakland, and especially those near the base, the Army base that's been converted into Oakland Bulk Oversight Terminal and so forth. Every household had somebody with asthma, a friend with asthma, or had been to the hospital with asthma. And it was unexceptional. And I say that because when I heard that the refineries neighborhoods actually have worse pollution, I'm in this fight. Because, you know, if you don't have caps on emissions, you're going to have more and more people like me that whenever I go from North Oakland to West Oakland, I have to wear a mask and because I have year-round allergies if I don't. Thank you very much.
Next speaker.
Can I call the next eight?
Yes.
Janet Pygeorge, Gordon Johnson, Richard Black, Samantha Klein, Bill Pinkham, Kathy Wheeler, Lori Mintzer, and Dan Sabaleski.
Thank you. Go ahead, sir.
Hi, Jeff Kilbreath, Richmond. I wanted to, and then for this I'll say, I've been on the Richmond Planning Commission for the last 2 years, and I was involved in the pretty thorough review of the 4,000-page CEQA EIR involved in the Chevron modernization project. So I understand what it
is. You're one of two people who read that full EIR.
Yeah, right. So I understand the value and the purpose of EIRs, but also the limitations of EIRs. And at the workshop that I went to on Monday on the EIR, you know, I came to understand better staff's plan and what's going to happen, and it seems fine. But it's important that the board understand that staff does not believe, quite reasonably, that CEQA and an EIR is where legal issues get discussed. And since on 1118, there are CEQA issues, and it's important to go through the EIR process. But on 1216, the EIR CEQA issues are minimal. It is fundamentally a legal issue, and that means it's up to the staff reports and the and the discussion of legal issues in the staff report.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Hi, greetings again. My name is Laura, representing the youth in Richmond. And I just wanted to say something about that was mentioned earlier. Just because ARB is going to be, you know, releasing their scoping plan doesn't necessarily mean that the board members can make lax decisions. Richmond residents have been and will continue breathing in this air. So we are still going to be pushing forward 1216, and we hope that I know that the workshops weren't including 1216, and it would be really wonderful if we did, so that the community knows what is going to be impacting them in the future, and hopefully for the better. And just as a reminder, you know, Richmond residents have the highest rates of asthma than in any other place in the nation. This is unacceptable, and it is because it is home to the biggest polluter. The Chevron refinery is the biggest polluter in California, and these are young folks, these are babies, these are teens, these are elderly people. And I also want to have Nancy speak.
Thank you, Laura.
Can I say something? I grew up in Richmond. I live in Richmond. I represent Richmond. I care about Richmond. It has some high rates of asthma, hospitalization due to asthma. It does not have the highest asthma rates in the country, so I just want to be clear. It has some high rates. And I'm saying this, look, it has a high rate of hospitalization due to asthma, and our health department has documented that. So I'm not saying it doesn't have asthma problems, has some serious ones. But I want to be clear, when someone says it's the highest in the nation, it isn't the highest in the nation.
But thanks, Laura, for the great comments.
I'm not saying it's not an important issue. I just think that's an important distinction, though.
So let's try to get through public comment. I really appreciate the board members' comments, too. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm Nancy. I'm just going to do a brief. I'm taking somebody else's time. And I just want to speculate. My name is Nancy Guayad. I'm a resident of Richmond. A member of CBE and a junior at UC Berkeley studying conservation and resource studies with emphasis in environmental law and justice. And I just want to, I've been reading over your agenda, and like many of the workshops, they are in different times, but one of my main concern is that you're not accommodating for everybody. The Bay Area is very diverse, and we need to accommodate for the people who only know one language. I have the privilege of talking two languages, but lots of people in Richmond, in Berkeley, in Oakland, they only speak one language, and it's just not Spanish. There are also Asian Pacific languages that need to be accommodated. So I'm just here talking to you guys, so you guys need to accommodate for these people, because this will bring a larger group in, because they also need to have their voices heard. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Hello, my name is Samantha Klein again, and I'm a student at UC Berkeley studying environmental science. I'm here today in support of the approval of Rule 1216 to put a cap on greenhouse gases and other pollutants from refineries in the Bay Area. My professors have talked in class a lot about how the Richmond Refinery is an example of the most serious environmental injustice in the Bay Area, and how these facilities inflict the worst health consequences of the fossil fuel economy onto primarily low-income communities of color. And I'm here today to advocate for those communities. And this is why we need local caps on emissions. And to everyone from the Chevron refinery that clapped because you don't have the highest rates of asthma in Richmond, like, that's not really a win for you, because you still have extremely high rates of asthma. And as you mentioned, hospitalizations due to asthma. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Mark Roos, San Mateo. There will be absolutely no midterm to long-term requirement for expansion of the refinery as governed by you to serve San Francisco Bay Area demand, and the same will likely apply to the rest of Northern California. The amount of fuel purchased for local use is going to start declining rapidly by 2020 as major battery vendors drop their prices to $100 per kilowatt hour at a capacity or less, and surviving battery brands reach 200 watts per kilogram or more, which will roughly double auto range while cutting the cost of a battery pack between one-fourth and one-half of what it is today. As the total levelized cost of stored renewable electricity drops below the price of fossil electricity from the grid, community choice aggregation will lead us through a full and fast switch to renewables for electricity generation. Remember, despite oil industry innuendo and lies, the purpose of refinery expansion is exports that can push us all over the brink of climate chaos. I urge you to remember also the alternative scenarios provision of CEQA. Some of those alternative scenarios can be full-blown, fast switch to renewables only.
Thank you.
While you're coming up, I notice Richmond, Virginia goes back and forth between number one and two in the country.
Good afternoon. I'm Richard Black. I'm here with the USW 326 in Rodeo. I just want to let you know, nobody speaks for USW except the people that are assigned to be here by USW. There's been people out here acting like they're representing USW. They don't represent us. We do not agree with Rule 1118 and 1216. We don't think it's good legislation. The reason being, we don't know what is yet. Apparently, some people think that 300 parts per million CO2 is causing global warming. But yet, we can have in our breathing air, Class D breathing air, that's agreed to by the state of California and governed by the state of California, 1,000 parts per million CO2. Find out what is. Do the real science.
Thank you, Mr. Black. Thank you. Next speaker.
Good morning, Chairman Mao and members of the board. My name is Gordon Johnson, and I work for the Shell Oil Refinery in Martinez. Originally, when discussions around 1118 started, there was talk about having a reduction from 100 in a million to 25 in a million, and then it evolved from 100 in a million to 10 in a million, and no real reason was given for this change. Shell would like to request that the district evaluate the incremental cost effectiveness of a reduction in risk level from the current level of 100 in a million down to 25 in a million, and then we'd also like to request that you do a similar cost effectiveness on 100 in a million to 10 in a million and compare the differences. Whether you pick 25 in a million, 10 in a million, or a different number, it should be based on some of these sound effectiveness evaluations. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Good morning. I'm Lori Minther, Chevron Richmond Refinery. I'm concerned that district staff is expending resources on a refinery emission cap rule that is not recommended by scientists on district staff, the Advisory Council, CARB, and the California Energy Commission. Staff is concerned about the lack of factual support for selectively placing caps on the refinery industry. Data from district monitors show that, quote, air quality in refinery areas is comparable to other urbanized locations. Air district maximum readings for PM2.5 do not come from refinery area monitors. San Jose consistently has the highest PM2.5 concentrations in the Bay Area. The Advisory Council is not convinced the Bay Area GHG caps would be effective in reducing overall GHG emissions. CARB outlined multiple detrimental consequences of local GHG caps. The California Energy Commission said caps would be detrimental to the economy if they constrained supply on the fuels market. In 2015, when supply on the fuels market was constrained during the ExxonMobil refinery shutdown, the direct cost to the California economy was over $3 billion. Thank you, Lori.
Director,
yeah, a lot of people keep saying CARB has said this and CARB has said that. I serve on CARB. CARB has not weighed in officially and said, do this and don't do that. Okay, so I think for anyone that's going to reference CARB, they have not come out and said, you should be doing this or doing that.
Thank you. Go ahead, sir.
Good morning. I'm Bill Pinkham, live in Richmond, associated with the Sunflower Alliance and 350 East Bay and Bike East Bay. I don't have any particular legal training or scientific training per se, but I have had 72 years experience in breathing. I've been with the environmental movement for a fair amount of time, and I have a pretty good handle on what's happening with global warming. But every now and then, an incident comes up or a statistic comes up that even floors me. I was reading in a New Yorker article a couple of weeks ago about glaciers in Greenland, and the interviewer flew into a glacier, basically, and interviewed the researchers there. Turns out that this massive glacier is melting at the rate of 6 feet per hour. That means 10 miles a year. And what I want you to do is just consider the overarching problem that we're dealing with here when you go into the specifics.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Next speaker.
Good morning, Chair Mara and members of the board. My name is Kathy Wheeler. I'm a chemical engineer with Shell. Reg 1118 is a rule that's focused on reducing health risk. As a mother, as a grandmother, and as a person who raised those children in the shadow of refinery and who breathes this air also, I support that focus. However, I have a number of concerns with the rule, numerous to list in even 1 minute. So I need clarity around the definition of TBAR, and it must include cost effectiveness as required by the Health and Safety Code. Risk is risk, whether it's from diesel engine, a gas station, or a refinery. The prioritization score should dictate the implementation schedule for the rule. I look forward to the formation of the technical working group, where I am hopeful that we can work together to address these issues in longer than 1 minute sound bites. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Wheeler. Next speaker.
May I call the remaining?
Yes, please.
So the remaining speakers are Greg Reed, Stan Chris, David Reinerson, Randall Roble, Stephen Rosenblum, Jessica Limoni, Lucia Watson, Jan Cecil.
And one more?
Nancy Navarro.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead, sir.
Hello, Dan Sabaleski from Shell and Democrat. Over the last several years, got to add that, several years this council has been imposing more and more regulations on businesses and likely raising the price of our consumer products. Who in the end does this hurt? Voters, businesses. I personally have witnessed this impact on a region in Northeast Pennsylvania, and it has never recovered and is the reason why I left there. As you are well aware, there has been a significant political shift in our country. Voters have clearly shown that they value their pocketbooks over long-term concerns. How do you think those voters will respond to more and more regulations and potentially higher costs of the products they buy? California already has the highest cost of products in the continental United States. When do you suppose voters and businesses say, enough is enough? Did you predict what happened nationally, and have you asked yourself, can it actually happen here? We all want a clean environment and prosperity for the region. We all have to work collectively to provide that balance. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker.
My name is Janet Pye George. I'm president of the RCA, Rodale Citizens Association in Rodale. In 1994, Unical blew Catacarb for 22 days. They didn't show up, state inspector or a county environmental person, until the last day, and they closed it down. At that time, we had another refinery called Pacific Refinery on the other side of our town. Let me tell you, this has been a very difficult year since 1994. Our children had to be placed in shelter in place. Many people had loss of thyroid. Many people, lives have been lost. They're gone now. And what we want now is for this generation and the next generation to breathe clean air, not just for us, but for the refinery workers too. And I've told you before, we are not anti-refinery. We just want them to do it right. And I'm sure that you,
thank you, Ms.
will help us. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Steve Rosenblum. I'm a retired chemist from Palo Alto, and I'm here as a citizen on my own time, and I've been here since 9:30. And I think the commission should consider holding its closed session before the meeting. That way, when we arrive as public citizens to speak, we won't have to wait for you to do things when we're not there. The job of this board is to protect our air and climate, to reduce emissions. There have been efforts to talk about caps since 2013, and it's long past time to implement Rule 1216, so we shouldn't be willing to tolerate any further delays in the proposed timescale. If the refineries sue, the public is behind you, our elected leaders. The refineries' only concern is about their short-term profits, not our health or climate. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Hi, David Reinertsen. I work with asthma patients occasionally. I also have known a couple of people, Lori Gardner and Dick Smith, who worked for Chevron. So I'm speaking to the workers here. You guys can take a break. Engineers, managers, et cetera. First, I was surprised to hear that we're not measuring the particulates right in the middle of the asthma zones. If you were concerned about overheating in your plant, you would measure the hot spots, not just random areas. That's up to you guys. Secondly, why isn't a cap on emissions the simplest way, the most predictable way to allow the engineers, to allow the scientists to set the budget to do it most efficiently? I think a cap on emissions is probably a lot simpler than trying to figure out cost effectiveness for each and every area of your refineries. That way you can spend the money on science and engineering and workers instead of on politicians and meetings. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker.
My name is Jessica Limoni. I've lived in the Bay Area my whole life and a new resident of Richmond, California. I support 1216. I had the privilege to be adopted into a family that lives in La Mirinda, and I never had to think about not breathing clean air. Clean air is not, it should not be a luxury. Everyone deserves clean air. I think it's obvious that capping emissions is the very least we can do. This is personal and political. I urge you to listen to these communities and please have meetings at more convenient times for the public to participate. You can make change. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker.
My name is Stan. I've been breathing for 39 years, and I like it. I also like to drive. I enjoy being able to cook at home with gas stoves and things of that nature. But I really need to prioritize, and I wish everyone would, life and the quality of it. Let's not get the highest rate of asthma. Let's try other challenges. Let's try to reduce and change the system in ways that are beneficial to all of life, not just humans, but the bunny rabbits, the planet. We are wearing away at the system, at the planet's immune system. Where are you all going to go? Where are you going to live? The planet is decreasing in its strength and power to sustain our hopes and our dreams. Thank you.
Thank you, Stan. Next speaker.
Hi, my name is Greg Reed, Chevron employee. Just had 2 points I want to make. One was I heard a statement that someone made that wanted to malign Chevron by stating that it was a top greenhouse gas emitter in California, but that statistic is merely a result of how much the energy the company supplies to California. It is misleading because it does not analyze efficiency of energy production. We need to make sure that we look at the right statistics and assess how clean a company is before making statements and presenting them as facts. I also wanted to applaud you, Director Joa, for making sure that what's being said is actually accurate. I also wanted to extend an invitation from our last meeting to you. If you wanted to come join us at a town hall, there's plenty of Chevron employees that would like to ask you questions. And then I also live in the area as well. My whole family's from North Richmond, Central, and South. And we go back before Chevron. We were around when it was Standard Oil. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Reed. Next speaker.
Hi, my name is Jan Cecil. I'm a resident of Berkeley. I've been coming to these meetings for a while. It's not my profession to study all the refinery issues, but there's a few pieces I wanted to put in here. I think we're all very afraid that without caps, there's a known, according to NRDC and the industry, there's a plan in fold to have an eightfold increase in deliveries of tar sands crude or dilbit to the Bay Area by 2030. Tar sands includes about 2 to 3 times the amount of greenhouse gases compared to other traditional U.S. refining and increases the number of PM2 particles as well, which are incredibly toxic. It also, the overall refining in the Bay Area has decreased some of the toxic things, the overall refining industry, but unfortunately, greenhouse gases and the particulate PM2.5 have been increasing steadily for decades.
Thank you so much, Ms. Cecil.
I'm sorry, what?
Thank you. Your time is up.
Oh, I had a... Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Lucia Watson, and I am a proud Richmond Refinery employee. Really, what I wanted to say today was, this is my first time. And just listening to folks in the audience, I think that everyone has an opportunity to have their opinion and that people should be respectful, that people see different sides of the story, but also making sure that people get their facts correct and making sure that before they, why are you wearing certain attire. Before you make any judgments, get the facts.
Thank you, Ms. Watson. Next speaker.
Hi, Rand Roble, Communications Coordinator for 350 Bay Area, representing 10,000 concerned citizens. I talked earlier about the runaway climate being like a hill that gets steeper and steeper, and the fact that we have a race right now to produce as much fuel, as much profit as possible. That is still the case, and we are still looking at the cap as a speed limit for somewhere in the country. The election is a nightmare for the climate. It's like go, 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 faster and faster, more carbon pollution. It's like lead in the water to the planet. You are at a historical point. You are going to establish with your vote on this eventually what California does with regard to capping emissions. Put a speed limit on it. It's not burn, baby, burn, drill, baby, drill, baby, drill. Let's put a cap on it. Sorry, my theatrics. And follow your mission of protecting the climate. Thank you.
Well, you have the mission statement on your shirt. Great. Thank you. Next speaker.
Greetings, board members. My name is Maricela. I'm a Bay Area resident. And the Air District's mission clearly states and says that it aims to create a healthy breathing environment for every Bay Area resident while protecting and improving public health, air quality, and the global climate. Rule 1216 would realistically be pushing on your mission statement, moving away from it. It would continue to put the residents that you represent at risk. So please keep in mind the mission statement.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Thank you, members of the board. I work for the Sierra Martinez Refinery, but today I'm going to take my jacket off, and I just basically want to say I am here representing my own community. Forget about representing Shell. Forget about representing the community. But I would like to ask all of you, aren't you tired, all of us, of going back and forth between regulation and whether it's done right or it's not done right? I think it's time to do what is right for both the community and also for the industry. And putting caps on the refinery, I'm not sure that's the best solution. I think that we ought to look into that a little bit more. You put caps on the refineries, definitely will make it more difficult to operate. What's going to happen to our cost of living here in the Bay Area? It is already unaffordable for those who are in marginal areas. What's going to happen to all of us, right? It's not only about our jobs. It's not only about protecting the industry. It's about protecting the people who already live in an area that is extremely expensive to survive. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker. So we have made it through the 48 to 50 speakers. Great. And we are still on item 22. Are there any follow-up comments, Mr. Broadbent or Ms. Roggenkamp?
No, Mr. Chairman. We've heard a lot today, and along, of course, with the comments we're going to hear on our draft staff report and proposed rules. We'll take all of this in, of course, as we move forward and continue to refine the proposed rules. You have heard some comments today about asthma rates in the Bay Area, and what we're going to do relative to that key point is send out to the board and put on our website the information that we have gathered before relative to asthma rates in and around the Bay Area. Because a lot of information is being said, some of which is factual, some of which is not. Not to say that, frankly, asthma rates are just, frankly, too high everywhere. So that is something that we feel very strongly about. But it would be good, I think, for you to understand the relative rates in and around the Bay Area, because we see high elevated levels of a variety of air contaminants. We also see high asthma rates in communities like Richmond, but also West Oakland, Bayview, Hunters Point, San Jose, and a lot of other places in and around the Bay Area. So I want to provide you with that information, also put it on our website for the public to see. And that's, I think, important information for everybody.
Clarification. So I just had a real quick question. I know Ms. Cuellar from UC Berkeley Conservation Resource Studies said that there's not multilingual translation or access, and I'm just wondering what do we do in outreach, but also making sure there's interpretation at meetings.
So thank you for that question, Chair Maher. We do have services available for expressing our written materials and at meetings in multiple languages. And if we know that there will be people in attendance at a meeting, we make sure that translation services are available. So it is helpful if people can let us know beforehand. But if we know that there's a large population of non-English speakers or primarily non-English speakers, we make that available.
And then the public knows that they could contact the 24 board members, too, to urge staff to do that. So it's we're multilingual access as an entity.
Absolutely. All your names and addresses are on our website.
Director Joya.
Jack, I think it'd be helpful if you go through also what the just be clear about what the other public opportunities are for public meetings or input as we go forward, and then I'll make a other comment after you mention that. I just think it's important. I know this rule, the idea for this rule started several years ago, and we understand the frustration that exists, that it's changed over time. There's different forms of it. There have been many, many public meetings on this issue, maybe not as many recently after this draft came out. So can you talk about going forward, what those opportunities for public input will be?
Thank you, Director Joya. So we are in the midst of our workshops right now. We've got two more to conduct, and we have scoping meetings as well. So this is a significant set of rulemakings, as you all know. And so it has always been our plan to be able to develop the initial set of rulemakings, proposed rulemakings, staff report, initial study, and then their process moves forward in terms of preparing an EIR, socioeconomic impact report. We are going to, though, also have another round of workshops for these before this rule will ever get before your consideration. And so we plan to hold public meetings in, frankly, the March-April timeframe. That's what we showed you earlier. And there'll be additional sets of workshops. I've heard folks raise concern that there's not workshops on 1216. We will hold them as well on both proposals. That is something that, that we always do, and we plan to do that again as well. As you've heard us talk about these proposed rules, we're holding these workshops in the communities, actually at hours that folks can come and talk to us after work hours, and so that's also going to be something we do. So I don't plan to deviate from that process. I plan to have a second round, though, frankly, to hear more public input.
Yeah. Thank you. Go ahead, John.
And I was going to say, I think we're hearing like a lot of concern about, you know, legal issues, closed session, and I think it's important to recognize that as a former lawyer, I get that, you know, lawyers can have different interpretations of it, and this is a classic case where we're hearing from our attorneys some legal issues, and we're hearing from other attorneys for groups that have come before us a disagreement with that. So I think we understand that. We lay that out there. We make the policy decision. We look at all of these other things and helping conclude what's the right thing to do. But I don't think there's anything, I want to be clear, I don't think there's anything, wrong going on in any closed session discussions we've had. It's all been trying to focus on legal issues. I do think, however, to the extent that legal interpretations rely on certain factual assumptions, it's those factual assumptions and facts that we want to flesh out in the EIR. And I hear you, Jack, say that that's what we're going to do. We're going to look at the factual assumptions you're making and make sure that the public and all of us can see whether that analysis is correct. And the other thing, and I hear, you know, for those refinery workers who are here who I understand care about this issue, and I think we've reached a place in our country where we often talk at each other. And I get, for everybody here, this is a really important issue. But we also do, when this comes to us, we do look at, there is an economic impact analysis that is prepared at our for our rules. Nobody here is wanting to close refineries down. We're trying to figure out the best way to protect public health, reach climate change goals, and have the least amount of public input. So I don't think it's always helpful when people say you're trying to shut us down, because that's not the intention. Doesn't mean that there may be more cost associated with complying with rules and regulations. There obviously will be. But we do an economic impact analysis, and we actually amended a rule, a draft rule before us last year to accommodate, you know, a facility that in which our analysis showed there would be some impact. It was on the Coke calcining plant. So we look at these things, and so for those who are here worried that this is like an all or nothing, it isn't. We want to protect public health, we want to address climate change, and we want to do it with the least amount of economic impact.
Thank you, Director Joya. Are there any other comments?
Yes.
Oh, Eric. Director Sparing.
Jack, can you talk a little bit about the public meetings and hearings? The information you gather, just talk about how that's processed, you know, what impact it has on the decision, recommendations. Just give, because you're going to receive a lot of testimony, and so just kind of give us a recap of how you use or integrate that into the recommendations.
Well, we've actually adopted a model which I think really works well. It's a model that actually I think is based on the way they do things over at MTC and ABAG. Our workshops are really designed to be able to so that the public can meet the folks that are directly working on the regulation themselves. Our staffs are actually sitting in front of information that's been put up on the poster to be able to tell the public everything from what is air pollution, what are you exposed to, here are the sources, this is how we regulate these sources, here's what we're attempting to do in these proposed rules. So it's really an interactive exercise. In addition, the staff then gives a short, brief presentation on the proposals and then takes comments, and it's an interactive process. All that information that we get, all the comments we get are all part of the record that we set for ourselves. We take all that information, and it's designed to be able to have us develop what we believe is the best proposal for you to consider. And that workshop process has worked well for us. I want to mention, though, we've talked about the EIR, and that is a very important piece of the rulemaking process. It will be a part of these two rules as well. There is also a socioeconomic impact report. We actually attempt to try to understand, by imposing these requirements on these industries, this is what we believe is going to be the impact relative to the economy in the Bay Area, and that includes such metrics as, does it impact jobs? Does it impact profits? How does it impact the Bay Area's economy? That's all laid out for you, and it'll be presented to you also as part of the rules in May.
So after you take the public testimony, do you respond to what you hear, or do you just gather it and go to the next meeting?
You're talking about the workshops?
Yes.
No, we take it all in. We actually try to interact with the public also, answer any kind of questions we have, but it becomes part of the overall summary of information we use in the development of the proposal. Is
that, and the staff report includes a response to the comments when that package comes to the board.
Yeah, one of my concerns is that you hear a lot of testimony. A lot of it is just not correct. I mean, it's really incorrect information. And if it's not corrected, the public leaves thinking that's correct. I mean, just like the statement, you know, some of the highest asthma rates in this country, there's not a refinery within hundreds of miles of it. And so, you know, I think it's important that, you know, as we go through these things, the very obvious things that are not correct need to be pointed out, and what our objectives are. You know, I think we all have the same common objective on both sides of this issue. It's just, how do we get there? And, you know, as this rule is being developed. But I'm just hoping that during these public meetings that, you know, staff is interacting when information is clearly not correct or outside of our authority or something, that needs to be pointed out.
No, I agree with you, Director Spearing. It's a little difficult in this setting for us to then respond to the public when public comments are made that are absolutely incorrect. And so we struggle with this same issue and trying to figure out how to make sure you know the best information. So that's why I'm subsequently going to send you asthma rates, health impact information across the Bay Area, and how does that relate across the country as well? Because we all struggle. You had 48 commenters today, and you're trying to get it all done in one meeting. And I know that that's also imperative to allow everyone an opportunity to speak. As we move forward, we will figure out a way to which we can try to correct the record, provide as much information as possible on a lot of this.
Thank you. Director Ross, then Director Zane.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jack, any idea, two things, any idea on when you might have a time frame for the dates, releasing the dates on the workshop for 12-16? And if you could provide that, not today, but soon. And the other would be, you know, on the website, I think for the people who are imbued and ingrained in this topic, they understand it. Most, I would assume, understand it. But the public that's just hearing about it, because I'm not getting stopped on the street, what are you guys deciding about? Could there be a page on our website that very clearly and somewhat, I don't mean real technical, but something that a lay person could understand the difference between the two proposals with some graphics and something that's very readable and embraceable by somebody who doesn't come to these meetings every month or every other month, that you could we could direct them to so they understand this would be one path and that's another?
Yes, and I also just want to correct the record because I don't necessarily believe that they are mutually exclusive either.
Right,
I don't
or think how they intertwine.
So, I would like to have something simple that does describe these proposals. We can do that, Dr. Ross, what you're suggesting, and I think that's a great idea. Something that's simple that is right up front of the website because this is going to be an important decision for you next year.
Yeah, so somebody doesn't have to look up a time, go to a workshop to understand the basic tenets of the issue. Right. Of the two proposals. Thank you.
Yeah, great suggestion. Thank you. Director Zane.
My suggestion was similar, but I just think, you know, if we're going to go out and do workshops, then let's find out where the questions are, work up a very simple FAQs and put it on the website. We could also have it as a handout when people come in too. How does this affect jobs? What's the timeline? How does it affect health? Impacts, and how does it affect the communities that live around the refineries? It's really about how it affects our quality of life, and jobs are a part of the quality of life, so we certainly are aware of that. But I think it needs to be written not as a technical paper, but really as a from a public information officer standpoint.
Thank you. Director Rice.
Yeah. Sorry. Two comments. One, I was thinking along the same lines as Director Ross, and I think that the public really needs to clearly understand what of the pollutants each of these rules actually addresses. There are different mechanisms for getting at a couple of the same pollutants, but also different ones, and I think there's a pretty easy way to display that, and they could be complementary. We don't know. And then I just want to say, we just went through an experience with our presidential election that was, that I would like us to do the polar opposite of. We do not want to emulate in our discussion and debate around these rules what we saw happen at the national level. That whole campaign and that the dialogue was full of hyperbole and exaggeration and fear tactics and fear-mongering and, frankly, not enough critical thinking. So I'd love to see us here, as we have disagreement and maybe disagreement over fact as well, model something completely different. And obviously emotion really plays into everything and maybe what compels us to pull a lever in the end. But I think we can do a much better job with really a really, really, really tough issue that we all care about. Public health and the climate in our communities.
Thank you, Director Rice. Any other comments, colleagues? Let's then move off of or to the next item, board members' comments. I wanted to thank Director Chavez, Joya, and Avalos, but especially Director Chavez and her staff, Hope Cahan, for the resolution that was just passed earlier this meeting that pretty much urges us to refrain from initiating any business with Wells Fargo Bank for a period of 2 years. But thanks to Director Chavez for that. Any other board member comments? Director Hudson.
If I read this correct, we still have a meeting on Monday for the executive committee. And hopefully by then we'll have an idea what the weather pattern looks like next week. If there's any way in the world we can avoid calling Spare the Air on Thanksgiving.
It's going to be raining on
even if it's 2 days before or whatever, I'd really, okay. I catch it every year.
I know.
So if there are no other, Director Haggerty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to congratulate staff on the Climate Forward Bay Area Leadership Forum. Congratulations to Jack and Lisa Vizzano and the crew and everybody. I did speak. I talked about manure, and I talked about New York and the 1800s, and It seemed, from what I could see, it seemed extremely well organized. It seemed informative. It seemed that the people that were there, it was very well attended, and people were very engaged in collaborating and talking in the hallways, and I was very impressed. It was really a very good event, and I hope that you make that, if you know, it probably is too hard to be an annual event, but maybe a biannual event or something. But congratulations.
Thank you, Director Haggerty. Seeing no other comments, I'm jumping to the chair's report really quickly. Congratulations to colleagues Liz Niss, Mark Ross, Jan Pepper, Rod Sinks, and Rebecca Kaplan on their reelections. Thanks. Yeah, congratulations. Also to our board member, former council member, soon-to-be supervisor, David Canepa, who's now on the San Mateo County Board of Supervisors, joining Carol Groom and others, but he represents District 5 now. Also, congratulations to Mayor Pauline Cutter of San Leandro for her recent appointment to the Air District Board by the Alameda County Mayor's Conference. I believe it's effective December 1st. But we've had the tremendous wisdom and experience of Mayor Bates over the years, and I just wanted to thank him for the decades of experience and work and wisdom that he's brought to our body as well. The last thing is the next Board of Directors meeting will be Wednesday, December 7th, 2016, at this office at 9:45. I think I've gotten to everything. Anything else?
I was reelected also, but I was unopposed.
Sorry, Shirley. Congratulations,
so
Shirley.
So was I, and so was Miley. So,
wow. Right. Great. With that, any other business, Ms. Hrotska? So no more business. I see no comments. Meeting adjourned. Thank you, everyone.